are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome to Business Rockstars, where I've got Jake Cloberdan, CEO and founder of One Hope. Thanks so much for stopping by and joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I am familiar with One Hope Wines. I've been to one of the parties, which is just one of the avenues for distribution. But big fan, love what you stand for. You're a mission-driven company. I'll let you explain, what is One Hope?
Yeah, One Hope, our mission is to empower people to serve and celebrate. So we kind of think about serving as both serving great award-winning wines, serving coffee, great gifts to people, but also serving your community, serving your country. And we like people to come around together around celebration and serve our wines. And so we do that through about 40 different wines, all that have a different measurable impact. So for instance, every case of our sparkling funds 25 meals for children fighting hunger, or every case of Pinot funds a pet adoption. We also sell other things like gourmet coffee and gifts, and we market them through restaurants, hotels, retailers around the nation, about 7,500 different placements. And then we also, as you alluded to, do parties and experiences and really try to democratize the Napa Valley wine tasting experience into people's homes, business, or into charity events and other types of venues like that.
Yeah, you're really disrupting the wine industry in a lot of ways, because first of all, it's a hard industry to break into if you didn't come from a family that where you grew up in wine. But then also, like you said, typically the tastings have happened in places like Napa. So can you give us a little bit of insight into disrupting this industry?
Yeah, well, we think technology and software is really important for that. And so we've built a great engineering team in-house. And people kind of go, what? An engineering team for a wine company? And a lot of that's about making our business more scalable, making the ability to bring the Napa Valley wine tasting to other people's homes comes down to being able to provide a platform for our cause entrepreneurs that are out there. So that's a bit of what we're doing that's disruptive, but we're also building a measurable impact into every purchase and every one of those events. So we do that instead of spending typical huge advertising and marketing budget. And we find that it not only improves our marketing to customers, but also accounts and partners want to be a part of it. Large restaurant chains like Landry's and McCormick & Schmick's, large retailers like Whole Foods. And then, of course, our community of cause entrepreneurs who market and raise money really in their local communities. We also allow people who host events to choose where an additional 10% of sales go to. So instead of the traditional route of maybe where a distributor or a retailer would be making that percentage, we're able to donate that percentage to a person's cause of choice. So we have people holding wine parties to raise money for Breast Cancer Walk or their kids' school. And we have about 200 to 250 of those going on a week. Not only is it our biggest sales channel now, but it's also our biggest marketing channel. And it's a great way to really participate in grassroots marketing and get the word out there through word of mouth.
Yeah, that's great. So let's go back to the beginning. I know that there were a lot of co-founders in the beginning. So take me back to when you came up with the idea. What were some of those first steps once you had the idea?
Sure. The early idea really dawned on me when I was in the back of grocery stores working in the wine business for the first time. I graduated from UC Berkeley in 2005, and I went to business school there. And I kind of fell in love with this idea, this romantic idea of selling wine. And I moved down to Newport Beach. That was my original territory. So can't get much better than that. Selling wine, Newport Beach.
Living the dream.
Living the dream. But really, I found myself in the back of grocery stores at like 3 a.m., you know, downstacking pallets of all kinds of different groceries. And you do that in exchange for the best display spots around the store. And so I wasn't only like stocking wine. I was also putting yogurt in the milk box, you know, and stacking Campbell's soup to the shelves. And it's then when I noticed cause marketing for the first time. That was October of 2005. And all these different products were raising money for breast cancer. And part of me thought, huh, this is kind of cool that they're raising money and for a good cause. And then the other part of me was like, they should do it year round. Such a temporary kind of felt like a gimmick marketing campaign to me. So that was when I first had the idea to build a wine brand that gave back year round. Another 6 months later, got a call from one of my best friends growing up, really my first friend that was a girl who lived next door to me growing up. And she shared the bad news that she had blood cancer. And that was an aha moment for me where I flew home to see her the next day. And on the plane ride there, I kind of decided I was going to tell her I'm going to really actually go do this. I had thought about this idea for 6 months. I had written down a few goals, but I hadn't really taken the first steps. And so when I sat with her, I told her, hey, I've had this idea. I'm going to start this business. And she told me what her path ahead looked like and the treatment she was going to be going through. And that's kind of the impetus of when I actually started the company. I flew home and formed the company. And then another year later about, I had gotten a winemaker and our first cases and my co-founders to kind of join me as I started to share the story of what I wanted to do. And so seven other people left from the wine company we were at to join me in this. And like I said, they were all a couple years into their career as well. And we jumped into it headfirst, 168 cases in the back of a U-Haul truck, drove them down from up in Northern California to a public storage unit in LA, and we were in business.
Wow, what a great story. So how many co-founders?
There were eight of us originally. There's six of us still at the company today. The other two are still big cheerleaders for us and have gone on to do great things. And but having six make it a decade.
And incredible.
10 years of giving back, 10 years of building a business. And really, as you touched on before, none of us came from the wine industry. None of us had families in the wine industry. So we literally started from zero. We had to talk a winemaker into making our first 168 cases. And it was 56 cases of Chardonnay, Cabernet, and Merlot. And the Chardonnay towards breast cancer, Merlot towards AIDS, and Cabernet towards autism. Since then, our Merlot now goes towards life-saving vaccines. But our Cabernet is still going towards autism and our Chardonnay towards breast cancer.
Wow. Okay. I've got so many questions. First of all, how do you make so many co-founders work? That's a lot of leaders.
It's challenging. At the time, we were all really good friends too. So even on top of it, we were already friends traveling into it. And I think it really, we just respected each other a lot. We started to learn how to communicate with each other. We started to learn how to kind of the difference between when we were friends and then when we were at work and had to put our professional hats on. But we also all just respected each other as leaders in our own areas of the business. And so even though I'm the CEO, I still can be led by our chief revenue officer when it comes to sales. I can still be led by our chief operational officer when it comes to operations and logistics and things like that. And so I think we always had a really nice balance of respecting what other people needed to lead in and all being able to lead and follow. And I also think we were just honest with each other and we trusted each other and we were willing to work hard for each other. But the number one thing that we talked about was being people that were inspiring to work for. And then also people that inspired the people that we worked for. And so if you're inspiring to work for and you inspire the people that you work for, then you're an inspiring person to work with. And I think we've continued to inspire each other along the way. And that's how you keep the band together for 10 years.
Yeah. And you were sharing off camera that you all have the same philosophy of leadership and that it's basically an upside down hierarchy. Can you explain that philosophy a little bit?
Yeah. Well, so me in particular as our CEO and really our executive leadership team, we have kind of a service culture. We are in the hospitality world and I think everybody really is in one way or another, but we very much are because we deal with wine and gourmet coffee and things like that. And similarly to hospitality, if you're a service-oriented organization, we think about me as the CEO not being on the top of this hierarchy, but being on the bottom and serving the next layer. And ultimately, what you see happen is our executive leadership team's down on the bottom, and then we've got our overall team. We serve our cause entrepreneurs, our accounts. They serve our customers, and our customers serve humanity. And so we really believe that, you know, it's us driving and serving versus putting orders down and going out to the end customer.
Can you give me an example of how you guys serve your team in a way that maybe isn't traditionally seen in other companies?
Yeah, I think that we, one, make our leadership team and executive team super accessible and transparent to the people that they work with. We have a really flat organization. So even if you're the leader, we kind of think of you having to put your name on it, but we think of the team as all being accountable on a daily basis. We look at where we need help and on a weekly basis with people's leadership. And ultimately that goes to the leadership team, and it drives this this comfort around it being okay to ask for help. Making it known that that's okay has created a comfort level where they feel like their manager isn't driving down orders to them, but more there to help support them and make them successful.
So we are going to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to talk more about building a wine company, and one that's mission-driven and really, really empowering your cause entrepreneurs. So sit tight. We'll be right back. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
When's the last time you checked your credit score? Those three-digit scores can have a huge impact on your financial life. Credit Karma can help you with free scores, free reports, and free monitoring. Credit Karma also gives you the tips, tools, and advice you need to understand your credit and how to improve it. You can even spot potential errors on your credit report. That can mean better interest rates on loans and credit cards, which can save you thousands of dollars in the long run. Signing up is completely free. No credit card needed. Visit creditkarma.com or download the Credit Karma app now.
Oh, hey.
Hey, did you hear? My friend's company was the victim of an email impersonation attack.
It's a serious threat to every business.
What if cyber criminals target us and trick accounting into making a wire transfer?
Don't worry. We have Barracuda.
So we're secured?
Yeah. Barracuda uses artificial intelligence to detect and block spear phishing and account takeover attempts.
What a relief.
Don't become a victim. Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda. Your journey secured.
Hey.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome back to Business Rockstars, where we are talking to the CEO and founder of One Hope. So we mentioned how you guys have been able to be successful in the wine industry, a very competitive industry, one that's hard to tap into, but you did it. You did have 2 years working in the industry, which you said that was helpful in some ways. Can you share why it was helpful?
Sure. Well, when I started, I knew nothing about wine. So just the wine education alone, education about one channel, which was mostly grocery stores and understanding that space. But the biggest thing was probably finding my teammates. They were all top-notch people. The company we worked for did a lot of the work finding great recruits from around the nation. And we were in a tight little class that was on a fast path to becoming big leaders with the organization. So it helped introduce me to them. It helped give us a running start to work together and find that we wanted to start a business together. And so sometimes getting into the industry, the biggest thing that it does is give you an introduction to other people who are passionate about the space that you're in.
Yeah. And then a little bit of that added respect within the industry too, that, okay, these guys paid their dues a little bit. They know the behind the scenes and people trusting you more.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think if we came in and had no experience and didn't really know at least some parts of what we were talking about, then we would have had no credibility. But we had worked in the trenches and we had done it with arguably the best in the business with our previous employer.
Now, another obstacle that entrepreneurs often face is, oh gosh, it's all about who you know, but I don't know anyone. And I think that you guys are also a really good example of how you ended up meeting the right people. It's not that you were born into the right family, et cetera, et cetera. You were at a trade show and you networked. You networked to meet the right people. So can you tell me about that story about meeting a winemaking icon?
Yeah, sure. It's exactly right. Showing up at these places, we went to hundreds of events before that trade show where we ultimately met Michael Mondavi, and Michael introduced us to his son, Rob Mondavi Jr., who ended up being a huge part of our wine story and our winemaking side of the business. Rob and his colleague and teammate, Tony Coltrane, who is a longtime family winemaker for the Mondavis and for Robert Mondavi, have made almost every wine that we have in our portfolio. And we've just recently added Mari Coyle, who's a young up-and-coming superstar female winemaker, who is our director of wine. So I think that running into them, you know, is a little bit by chance. And I always feel super grateful and fortunate with it. But it took, you know, hundreds of events before where we didn't necessarily run into Michael Mondavi or a legend like that.
It's a numbers game.
Yeah, a little bit of it is numbers game. And then also, I think it's, you know, studying the past and forecasting the future. And so it's, you know, how many are you doing every day? But it's also creating a good strategy and continuing to tinker with it based on your previous track record. And so you want to not only up your numbers, but up your closing percentage. That's usually a pretty good sign.
Right.
But I'm across the years, we've been lucky enough to add some of the best athletes in the world, some of the best musicians, some of the best CEOs to our community of investors and partners in One Hope. And so for that, it's because we cover a lot of ground. We had a lot of people talking to a lot of different people.
Yeah. In addition to the numbers game theory, what do you think has been the key to building those right relationships?
I think kind of doing what we said we were going to do. I told a lot of people early on, like, hey, we're building this company to be a platform for giving back, a platform for cost-centric commerce and building a measurable impact in your business. And over time, we've done that and we've refined that system of how we do it. And I think we're one of the best in the business world now about quantifying our impact and communicating that out to our consumers so they feel connected to it. One of the other things I said we were going to do, I said we're going to be the largest direct-to-consumer wine brand in the U.S. And now I think we're on the path to be the largest direct-to-consumer wine brand in the world. And they watched us do this over time. I told them, I started saying that about like 7 years ago when we first started going online. And so when people kind of, even if they sit on the sideline and they decide not to get involved, they still watch, you know, and you never know when it's going to be. I've had an investor that recently invested with us that I met 7 years ago, pitching him on our seed round, and now we're in our Series C. And so it's not only about, you know, numbers game and how many people you can talk to. It's about how you follow up and not just follow up with them, but follow up with what you said you were going to do. And if enough people see you do what you say you're going to do, when you do it again and you say, now I'm going to do this, they listen.
Amazing. Yeah, really building that trust and follow through. So let's talk about the direct to consumer because, wow, that's amazing. On track to be the biggest in the world. Tell me a little bit about that side of your business and how you've been able to grow so quickly.
Yeah, well, we started in the traditional side. So most of our business up until a few years ago was still through what's called three-tier in the wine industry, where you sell to a distributor and the distributor sells to a retailer or a hotel or a restaurant. But we started becoming intrigued with this idea that more and more people were buying everything online and having it shipped to their doorstep. And so we started thinking about direct-to-consumer in 2008, so only a year after we started. And back then, very few wineries were online and shipping because you could only really legally ship to a little over 10 states. And so it was only a portion of the market. But we jumped in anyways because I really believed that this was going to be a thing of the future. And now if you flash forward to where we are today, we've still got our traditional channel where we sell to distributors and retailers and restaurants and things like that. And we do a large portion of business there. But 85% of our business is actually through our direct channels. So we sell online through onehopewine.com, as well as Amazon, where we're the number one selling wine brand on Amazon. We sell what we call inside sales, where we sell directly to companies, and we sell great gifting programs for holiday gifting and year-round gifting and wine consumption. And then our last channel we call Via One Hope. And Via One Hope, as I touched on, is this direct marketing model. We call it merit-based marketing because someone can come in with us brand new. And even if you have no seniority, you can earn your way up based on a meritocracy with us. And that channel is growing at over 250% year over year. And it's also now our largest channel. But all of them kind of work together. And as Via One Hope grows, we're seeing more and more pull coming from restaurants and hotels asking to buy our product. And it's because they're learning about it in this kind of platform that where we democratize the Napa Valley wine tasting experience, and we're bringing it all around the nation.
Let's talk about your cause entrepreneurs. How does your company empower them, and what do you really think it takes to be successful as a cause entrepreneur?
Great question. So what we do to empower them is provide them, one, a great portfolio of products, Some pointers on how to run the business, everything from how to outreach to a person who is going to host a wine event, to how to follow up with a customer, how to talk to people at the party, how to follow up after the party. We give them a great wine education. So Mari, our director of wine, not only a superstar winemaker, but she's great on video and creates these modules to train them. The last one last week was called Champs 101. And she took them through all these different types of champagnes, sparkling rosés to champagnes and everything in between, and taught them the difference of them. We try to empower them with giving them a sense of community and making it a lot of fun.
So cool. Well, such an amazing business that you've built. Congratulations. And thank you so much for giving us a behind the scenes look and so much business insight. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for being part of our mission. We've donated over $2.5 million to date. And that number keeps raising. We'll do over $1 million this year for the first time. And it's pretty exciting. And shows like yours are the reason that we continue to get the word out there.
Oh, well, we're happy to help you get the word out. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated. What other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to end.
Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Joining us right now is Michael Brandt. He's the co-founder of NutriBox. And we've got the product right here. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, brother.
It's great to be here, Mark.
So tell us, what are we looking at here?
So this is GoCubes. This is one of our products. It's chewable coffee. So,
and I had these. These are delicious, by the way.
Yeah, you got them down. It comes in a 4-pack. It's random assorted, and there's 3 flavors. There's latte, pure drip, and mocha.
It's got the assortment inside of here, and every 2 cubes is 1 cup of coffee.
Exactly. So you're holding 2 cups of coffee, and it's awesome for a lot of reasons. It's super convenient. You can take it with you anywhere. You can take it with you to outer space, right? It's not going to spill all over.
We were just talking about space.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, next week on your trip, you know, take a couple for the other, you know, astronauts.
And I ate these, dude. I'm feeling good. I'm
like, yeah, well, so that's actually interesting. So besides just the convenience aspect of it, they have a better performance profile than
you were talking about
coffee.
That.
Yeah.
It's like the coffee and tea aspect.
Right. Like, so our whole background at NutriBox is cognitive enhancement. So different things that you can eat that affect your mental performance. So caffeine is something we all, you know and love. And there's another compound called L-theanine, which is in tea. It makes tea more mellow. And when you have the proper ratio, which is a lot more L-theanine than what you would find in tea, when you have the right ratio, there's actually been a ton of science behind, like, people that are where they study this combination on, and people do significantly better. And so,
and that's inside of here.
Yeah, there's caffeine and theanine in a 1-to-2 ratio, and people love it. People love the performance.
I see it. L-theanine.
Yeah, and you can learn more on our website. We go into all the science on our website. That's one thing that we found is that people really appreciate
you went to
coming
Stanford?
And nerding out about it. Yeah.
What'd you go to Stanford for again?
I studied computer science and design at Stanford.
Computer science. How has going to Stanford and getting a degree in computer science and design helped you with this business?
Oh, well, so I think there's one thing I want to say up front, which is, like, we're a team now, right? Mm-hmm. I do what I do.
You stay in your lane.
I appreciate the need to have a team of experts, right? We have MD, PhDs on our team. We're doing trials on nootropics up on clinicaltrials.gov. We're running our own research at a university. I mean, they're running the research for us. We're paying them to just do independent research for us. So as a team, we have just rock solid credentials, right? And it takes a village, right? No one ever made $1 billion alone. The way I see it is you're going to need the best designers with the best technologists, the best scientists all in a room together. That being said, my particular specialty comes around, you know, how do you make a great product? How do you make something that people really love when people are interacting? You know, what do they need to know before they even buy your product? How do they want, what is that habit going to look like? I worked at YouTube for a while. I was actually a product manager at YouTube, and thinking through a lot of the way that the product worked. It translates directly over to, you know, building an e-commerce site or even building the packaging of how our products come to you in the mail. Like, our other products besides this are pills, and they're a little bit more hardcore, like biohacker than just gummies. And, you know, a lot of people love them both. And we think through, you know, every aspect of how we communicate the information to you. And then beyond that, we're working on interesting new software to help you track your mood and cognition throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And with the goal there being able to make personalized supplements. So what if you could have the Mark pill every morning?
I love that. I could see this thing being like right on the little stand when you walk up to pay for your cup of coffee at Starbucks or a boutique coffee store.
Yeah, it's like have a cup now and then have a couple of cubes for later.
Yeah. No, I dig that. So what, you guys had to raise money, right?
Well, we didn't have to.
But you did.
Yeah, we're cash flow positive since day one, so we never actually had to raise money. But with any business,
why did you?
But so this is, I mean, it's a classic thing of like, hey, if you're cash flow positive, we don't technically need to raise money, right? We're not going to go broke or whatever, but you can grow faster if you do have money, right? If someone gives you, if you're making X dollars and someone's like, okay, cool, let me give you 10X dollars today, right? If you're making X dollars a year and someone says, hey, I'll give you 10X dollars, you're basically fast forwarding time 10 years, right?
Instead
of waiting 10 years to save up that money and go do a big R&D project or a big marketing spend or hire some people, you want to be able to move quickly. And so sometimes cash lets you do that. If you can show to investors that you're good operators, that you're good at turning nothing into something.
If you can show them how they're going to give you money and they're going to either break
so
even.
This is something I definitely want to say, okay, is a lot of times with entrepreneurs, we look at investors as like, you know, they're on the top of the mountain. We're like, oh, please, please, please give me money. Like validate my business, like make me legitimate. And I would actually say, put yourself in the shoes of the investors. The investors are looking for the top tier entrepreneurs. And it's actually hard to get in on the deals that the top entrepreneurs are doing, right? Travis Kalanick, CEO of Uber, Elon Musk runs Tesla. Like these people, if they're running new companies or they're doing another round of investment on their current company, like investors are knocking down their door to get into that deal. So I think it's an important kind of frame to have when you're speaking with investors is like,
people want what they can't have.
Yeah, there's a lot, this is crazy to say, but there's a lot of cash in the world. And there's a lot of people who wish they could take that cash, invest it in something, and see some returns.
That's what they do for a living.
Yeah, that's what they do for a living. And there's very few world-class entrepreneurs, period. There's very few people that can take something and make it into a lot. There's just not that many people. Like, and if you can do that, then you will never have a problem raising money. Like, if you can fundamentally create value, raising money from investors, I think people get sidetracked by like, oh, I got to raise money. It's like, look, if you can operate a business and you can turn a profit, everyone wants to invest in that. Mm. Like, that's just not even a question.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up because it's like everything in life. It's how you look at it and how you frame it. Co-founder of NutriBox, Michael Brandt's joining us. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. And you brought up a great point because it all has to do with posturing. I mean, it's the difference between, it's just a human, but a human can be extremely not confident or confident. And a company can be begging for money or they can posture themselves where you're lucky to even have the opportunity to invest in us. So what do you think it takes outside of the mindset, but actually the business to set it up where a company should have investors knocking on their door versus the opposite?
I think there's a few things. I mean, I think you kind of have to not wait for permission. Like your investors have nothing to do with how much press you're getting or how much sales you're doing. Like that's something that comes down to you. And if you can go and tell an interesting story and be talked about in, you know, BuzzFeed, New York Times, be on cool podcasts, right? Then you're generating this sense of social capital that like no one can stop you from doing that. And you don't need to wait for a check from an investor to do that. Like you just go do that.
That's all about you.
And same thing with sales. A lot of times people have like a killer idea and what I say to them is like, hey, yeah, okay, that's cool. Yeah, you should sell a million of those. But like first, can you sell 10 of them?
Yeah.
Like you have these quickly,
and you go, hey, these are really great. And the guy goes, how many have you sold? And you go, none. But you could have been selling them already individually.
You could literally, the way we started the company was we made a website where you could buy the product and we didn't know how we would actually go and make it yet. It was a really cool product that we had defined. And we said, hey, it's on pre-sale. You can save money, buy it now. It's launching in a couple months. And we said it very confidently. It wasn't like, we're going to see what the take is on it and see if people like it or not. No, we were just like, hey, we're launching this. It's real. Buy it on pre-sale now. And then we got, you know, a bunch of orders. Not like, no one made $1 million overnight on that first thing. But the idea was then, okay, we had a sense of validation that, hey, people want to buy this. And then we can go and figure out how to do it. And I think that's what I would encourage. Like, if there's ever the Kickstarter, Indiegogo, that stuff is amazing. Like, if you can ever validate what you're doing ahead of time, like, try to have the sales, like, don't let perfect get in the way of pretty good. Like, and, like, launch a product, make something good, drive some sales, and then you can talk to, with investors. If you're making, I don't know, $20K a month, like, that's not a $1 billion company yet, but someone can, you can credibly make the statement that, hey, this might be a $1 billion company, because, like, you've already gone from zero to $20K a month. Yeah. Maybe you can go to $200K to 2 million. Like, it's a lot more, I would take that bet over someone who's just coming to me with a good idea.
It's the horse and the jockey. It reminds me of a story of my friend Jake Ducey. He's now written 3 books by the age of 24, and his second and third book had massive publishers behind him, because his first book, he went door to door at 19 yep. years old and sold 25,000 copies and made $250,000 at 19 going door to door selling his books. So guess what? When he wrote his second and third book, the publisher was like, at the very least, homeboy's going to go door to door and sell these books and make us $250,000, as he already did.
Yeah.
And that's the perfect example, because that's what you need to do with your product. It's like the investors look for the horse or the jockey being the person. And if you're somebody who they can look at, and it's like, if we invest in this guy, at the very least, he's going to go door to door and sell these cubes and get us our money back. And so I love that you brought that up, because that's really what it takes. You've got to be a hustler. You can't just sit back and wait.
And I think a really important part of what you're saying there is to, like, do things that don't scale. I think a lot of times as entrepreneurs, you want to do things that scale really well. We want to use technology. We want to have a website that can handle a lot of users, or an app that people can just download while you're asleep. Your community can download and use your app. That's really cool, and it's nice. You should think about things that can scale. But then I think also you have to be the chief evangelist. Like, every Uber driver, you better believe they're getting Go Cubes. Every person I meet anywhere, they're getting Go Cubes because, I understand, like, a founder's time cannot scale, but I also understand I'm the chief evangelist, right? And everyone on our team, we're in charge of selling it. And if we can't sell it, then how can we expect any of the people in our community to be telling their friends about it?
Yeah.
And so it's just this nice test of, are you really in it? Like, would you go door to door? Like, if you're,
would you go door to door and sell it?
Yeah.
So what's your advice for that beginning entrepreneur who's out there and they're either in their first or second year, or maybe they haven't even cut the cord from their job yet to get started? How do you, give them some advice about, here's what you need to know if you're in your first years, or if you haven't even gotten started yet, what do they need to know?
I think that there's just a lot to be said for working hard. I think that, and this comes from a background where, having gone to Stanford, I've seen a lot of people who are, like, very smart, sophisticated, high-level thinkers, and that's not always enough to get the job done. And I think that there's actually a huge, just blue-collar, no nonsense mentality that it takes to run a business. Like, yes, I can talk to you for why this is a $1 billion space, why humans are the next platform, why the idea of human augmentation is, like, just incredibly cool. And that's why I can talk to investors too. And it's fully true. Like, this is why I'm spending my life on it. It's a $1 billion thing, but I'm still interested right now in optimizing for, like, $100, right? If I can have a negotiation, or if we can make something on our website work better, where the conversion rate is better, if we can make the packaging look a little better, like, I'm still obsessed with the dollars of where we're at, because that's how it builds up. So I think you have to be kind of bimodal. Like, you can't just have the big sexy story. You do need to have that, but you also have to be down to, like, you have to, each one of your customers has to love you. Like, you can't just be like, oh, whatever, I'll get some customers. Like, the way you do that is by
every single little thing. I don't remember if it was Warren Buffett or somebody, but I think it was Warren Buffett. And he said, it's not the dollars that make me a billionaire, it's the pennies.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, what an interesting frame of it. Michael, pleasure having me on the show, brother.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
And now, a Business Rockstars Minute. How can you raise money for your startup business? I'm Pat O'Brien with the Business Rockstars Minute. As a startup, the big question can often be, where can I find money to fund my business? Here are a few things to keep in mind when trying to acquire funding. One, target the right investors. There's angel investors, venture capitalists, or what's known as 3 Fs, family, friends, and fools. Do some research and find the pros and cons of each type of investment. Two, write a business proposal before seeking investors. This enables you to clearly articulate the viability of your business. Three, understand your audience. See things from the bank's perspective. This will make their assessment of you more accurate if you already know their expectation level. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Hey guys, good news. The outrageously expensive Little Blue Pill is now generic, which means you can get the prescription medication to treat ED at affordable prices. And Hims makes it extra affordable. Right now, get your first month supply for free. All you pay is just $5 for your medical consultation when you go to forhims.com/doctor. After that, it's just $30 for a month's supply. Sure beats paying big bucks for just one blue pill, doesn't it? Plus, you won't need an awkward in-person doctor's appointment to get the prescription. Hims has doctors online who can prescribe the medication, and a pharmacy sends it right to your door. It's affordable, private, and incredibly easy. Nobody likes dealing with ED. Now, thanks to Hims, nobody has to. And that's really good news. To get your first order for just $5, you need to go to this exclusive address, forhims.com/doctor. That's forhims.com/doctor for your first month for just $5. forhims.com/doctor.
Prescription products require an online physician consultation and are only available if the physician determines a prescription is appropriate. See website for full details.
Freedom doesn't start in the White House. It starts in your house. Here's Helen Creeble.
A woman in Philadelphia having an argument with her boyfriend in a restaurant got so angry she threw a soft drink at him. Then, as she was storming away, she slipped on the wet floor and broke her tailbone. Never mind that the floor was wet because of the drink she herself had thrown. She was still so angry she decided to sue. She did not sue the boyfriend because he didn't have any money. She sued the restaurant for having a wet floor. A jury ordered the restaurant to pay her $113,000. Her medical bills were real, of course, but does that make the business owner responsible? Looking through the lens of liberty, if we see any law-abiding citizen being held liable for the bad behavior of another, it ought to make us all angry, and we should do something about it.
For more, check out our podcast at lensofliberty.org.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect the community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this is CEO Roundtable with Martin Kistler, who is the CEO and founder of Ignition, and Ethan Centuria, who's the CEO and co-founder of DealStruck. Welcome, guys. Let's talk about being a CEO. First of all, what kind of a culture do you have at your office? What's the culture around there?
Well, our culture is sort of a mix of seriousness and fun, because we're a financial services company. We're a lending business. So
how much fun is that?
Depends who you ask. I think it's quite a bit of fun. But that's one of the few things I sort of know how to do. So, I think doing things you're good at is fun. So our culture is one that's very transparent. We meet as a company regularly. There's regular communications out to everyone. It's very open. It's not hierarchical. We let a lot of our, it's really bottom up in that sense, let our employees sort of drive a lot of the cultural things that we do, the activities that we do, the way we approach our clients, the processes that we have, and all those sorts of things.
Right. It sounds good to me. I was thinking financial is not always fun is what I meant.
Yeah, no, it's
Lehman Brothers, where you used to work, would know.
Yeah, it's a tough business. It's a high touch business. It's got a lot of
it's exciting.
A lot of ups and downs, but it's a valuable service, right. And it's exciting to do.
I completely agree. I wasn't putting you down. What traits do you look for when you try to hire somebody?
Passion, commitment, and creativity. Because we're mostly 80% creatives.
How do you measure that, though, when you meet somebody?
Well, obviously, some
10-minute
people,
meeting.
They have portfolios, reels. I want to see what they've done before. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm a bit of a gut man that I believe in instincts. If I feel like I feel the right connection, I give a little more trust in it than just looking at portfolio.
All right. Which is more important to you, mission, core values, or vision in your company?
I think core values are where it all starts, because the mission can change a lot in a startup. You think you're building one business, and 6 months later you're building a different business, and so that mission could change.
And then eight months later you're selling a different business.
And likewise with the vision, but if you have a certain sort of core set of beliefs that people buy into about the way you're going to do things, regardless of what it is that you're doing, then you'll find your direction.
What's the vision of Ignition?
vision is we want to do the best creative we can possibly do and reach as broad of an audience we can possibly
And storytelling
do.
In a way that the public can...
Storytelling that connects across every platform.
How do you motivate people in your company?
Give them a lot of responsibility.
I like that
you
answer.
Know, I think that people want to feel that the work that they do is important. So for that, you know, we try to remind each other the why we're doing mm-hmm. it. Because it's very easy to get lost in sort of the ins and outs mm-hmm. of the daily minutiae of the business. And we try to, you know, provide lots of room for responsibility, growth, upward mobility, and give people a real sense that the outcomes of the business depend on the work that they do every day.
Right, and that makes the needle move a little more too, right? Because they feel empowered.
Exactly.
Right. So, like, you're not the only one doing anything.
And it means I have to do less work.
I was going to say, I picked on you enough. I was going to say, one less thing.
Well, I think that's an excellent point. I mean, you want to make people have some accountability. Therefore, they have to own the process, what they do. Comes with the good and the bad. So you can give credit where it's due and empower people.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect the community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien, CEO Roundtable, Martin Kistler, and Ethan Centuria. How would your employees describe you as a CEO? I don't think you're mean.
I would say that they would describe me as hands-on. Mm-hmm. I like to work in the trenches with them and get alongside, get my hands dirty in the work, and not sort of hold myself out as, you know, above the business. I think they would describe me as transparent and relatively easygoing.
Right. In the way the world works now, it moves so quickly. How do you prepare for the future? Because you have no idea, well, none of us do really, but where it's going to be in 2 years or 3 years, or who's going to have money, who's going to have a budget.
As you just said, I mean, we don't have a crystal ball, but you have to be alert and keep your eyes open and never stand still. I mean, I think that goes to...
It's a scary proposition, isn't it, when you're in charge? Yeah.
But I think that goes to the point what you were saying, Ethan. It's like as a CEO, you want to be in the trenches. You want to be with your people because there's no way that one person can have all the right ideas, all the right decisions. You have to be in touch with your trusted team and listen and learn. It's still maybe up to you to make the right decisions, but I think that's your field of information.
Mm-hmm. How long could you go without your cell phone?
It's in my backpack right now, well, so yeah, I've gone at least 20 minutes.
We don't allow them in here, but...
I try to unplug.
By the way, you're not a rule breaker, are you? but seriously, I mean, these things have made it more difficult or better? Better, right?
Better for the most part. I think, you know, every... I'm not a creative and in a creative business, and you know, Martin is, but, you know... Getting away from it and having a chance to really separate from your people, your vendors, your employees, your investors, and all of that, and just really think is mm-hmm. important. And so, you know, when I go away, I try to really go away and turn the thing off. Could be maybe 2 weeks is the longest I've been since
what?
I started the company.
2 weeks?
2 weeks, yeah. I did
That's it. A business rock star's record.
Well, I don't know if I should be proud of that or not.
No, I'd be proud of it. That's stamina, man. How many people do you employ?
About 250.
How do you keep track of everybody? I mean, do you keep track of their families and their personalities? And
I would say yes. Mm-hmm. It's again, I mean, it's you have to have a good system. You have to have really good people around you, and you have teams. And I think yes, I think I know everyone mm-hmm. and what they're about.
Good luck to you guys. 2 weeks. That's our record here.
All right.
Cell phone. That's
I'll
pretty
take
darn
it.
Good. Thank you for joining us.
Thank
it's
you
been
very much.
CEO Roundtable. We are here to inspire, inform, and connect the community of entrepreneurs. This has been CEO Roundtable, Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. See you next time.